Succession number 28497, reel number 1.
Owen Smith, reel 1. Can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
Mull Barton in Norfolk, March 1922.
Can you tell me what your father did for a living?
A number of things. He was manager of. He's finished up being a manager of a fish shop.
And what about the family home? What was that like?
Oh, it was just ordinary council house. They were poor, relatively poor people, and his wages would be about 50 bob a week, something like that.
What about your education?
Oh, well, I went to City of Norwich School, which was a grammar school. It's where Charles Clark's people go now, you know, the education secretary. But it's now a comprehensive, but it was grammar when I was there.
So had you won a place at the grammar school after the, was it the equivalent of the 11 plus at that time, or was it the 11 plus?
I went to an elementary school first, of course. Nelson Street Primary School in Norwich.
And did you play any sports at that time, or have any hobbies?
I used to be involved mainly in looking after doing gardening and looking after neighbours' bikes. My father was very keen cyclist. So he was mad, you know, he used to have a fixed wheel bike and go around corners, you know, pedalling at the same rate, but that was before three-speed gears.
Did you enjoy cycling?
Yes, I did, yes.
And given your later career with the Fleet Air Arm,
yes,
did you have an interest in aviation from an early age?
No, not really, no. I wasn't... I was going to show you a picture, but no, it wasn't till I saw a friend. Can I mention it? Yeah. Arthur Tolson. He went to school. He was one of my schoolmates, and I saw him. Because I was in the reserved occupation for 2 years, I wasn't involved in the service, and I met him in London Street in Norwich. He was coming towards me with all these sub-lieutenant's uniform and a silver knob stick, and I thought, oh gosh. But then when I got after 2 years, I failed my weights and measures exam, and I got called up. And I thought, well, Fleet Air Arm was too much for me. I'll have to try the RAF. So I went to Cranwell, and I was interviewed there. And the group captain, although I passed all the tests, the group captain turned me down. And I remember saying to him, what the hell do you want, sir? I was polite, but I was annoyed. So I had to come back to Norwich and go to the recruiting office again. And he said, what do you want, Army or Navy? I said, well, I don't want the Army. I said, if it's Navy, I would like Fleet Air Arm. He said, why not? And it went from there.
So prior to this, What employment had you got when you left school? What was the job that you got into?
I started off in an incorporated accountant's office in Old Pye Street, Norwich, H.O. Bennett & Co. And then I went to the county council. I was just a clerk, junior clerk, in the surveyors department. And then there was a vacancy in the weights and measures department, and a friend of mine suggested that I apply for it, which I did. I had to go before a committee in the centre, no, a big committee, and I got the job. Can you stop it? I spent most of my time as a junior clerk and training to be a weights and measures inspector. I used to be left in the office at the start, but eventually I became an assistant and was taken around by the inspectors doing the job in the county. Sorry.
So what did the job entail?
Oh, weights. Well, everything to do with trade. That's inspection of shops, scales, factories, scales, fertilizers and feeding stuffs, pharmacy and poisons act, food and drugs, everything connected with trade.
And did that become important in wartime, obviously with restrictions?
Oh, well, that's why I reserved for a couple of years.
Prior to the war starting, had you had any thought that there would be a war?
But no, not really. No, I was too young. I was 17 when war broke out. And I remember standing at the bottom of the garden with my mother and heard the first siren. And then I, from there on, I volunteered for the Home Guard. And my first impression was rather frightening, was being given a rifle with a piece of string as a sling. I was put in a quarry with 5 rounds of ammunition, and with the imagination of German paratroopers coming out of the sky. And what was I going to do? I'd never fired the thing. And anyway, I eventually stayed in the Home Guard, and I became a corporal.
When had you joined it?
When? When I was 17, at 19...
Would it be 1940 when the appeal was made?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So at this time when you were given the rifle with the string...
Yes.
Had you been issued with a uniform?
I got it. We got an ordinary... at the beginning. I was just in the sports jacket and flannels in this quarry, and I was frightened to death. But no, I eventually got proper uniform, and you used to go to drilling and all the rest of it.
How often would you meet?
Oh, well, quite often, about probably 3 times a week or more. Oh, whenever. And I was used to guard Norwich Castle ramparts, and when the strange firemen had to come into Norwich when it was bombed, I had to cycle in front of fire engines to guide them to fires, and then stay with them and assist them, you know, holding hoses and that sort of thing.
In the early days with the Home Guard, what was the type of training you received? Because obviously you didn't have very much equipment or uniform.
Oh,
but
yes,
what was the training that you received?
Yeah, we had, drilling and armaments and that sort of thing.
What type of weapons were you?
I finished up with a Thompson submachine gun and a spool of ammunition. But and the rather interesting point about that was that German planes used to come over low at Norwich, over Norwich, because it was bombed quite frequently. And I was there in the garden with a submachine gun and afraid to fire these planes because I had to account for the ammunition.
What was a Thompson machine gun like to handle?
Oh, it was very good. It just had it was quite short and had a round ammunition container.
Was it easy to aim and fire?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes.
How heavy was it?
No, I can't remember exactly.
Was it heavy to carry around, or was it...
Oh, I used to have it slung on my back, so it couldn't have been too bad. Cycle with it, you know, go on parade with it.
And you became a Lance Corporal?
Yeah,
a corporal.
Corporal, yeah.
What was the kind of mixture of people in the Home Guard at that time?
Most, well, about 50-50, most of them are old. We had a Sergeant Oates who was in charge. He was a war veteran, and he's a really nice fellow.
So did they teach you all the things like drill?
That's right, drilling and how to and armaments and that sort of thing. And but we used to go on to elementary manoeuvres, you know. To,
well, what did that entail?
Well, just camouflage and nothing very elaborate.
People see Dad's Army on television. Is that a fair impression you would have had of the Home Guard?
I think so, yeah. We used to... the worst part of it was having to be awake at night or with a uniform on, sleeping, and I could still smell the khaki uniform, you know.
Was it a tiring time? Obviously you were working and doing Home Guard duties.
Yes, that was extremely difficult because of the air raids and the Home Guard and the study. You know, sleepless nights and that sort of thing. It was... We lived near... My father, when I was 15, he went into a mental hospital. He had been a soldier in Mesopotamia. And suffered from that mentally, and he finished up in the asylum. And so it was just my mother and myself, and eventually we moved near to Mouse Hold Aerodrome, and so we were very close to anti-aircraft fire and so on.
Can you tell me something about the bombing of Norwich? You mentioned a little bit, but could you elaborate a bit more on what it was like?
Oh, it was pretty bad at times, as I've said. It was raided quite frequently. I said my impressions were always of these low-flying aircraft going back home to Germany.
What was the damage like to the city?
It was quite extensive. It's very hard to take your mind back to it, but and mostly in the centre around Burr Street, and where I got involved quite a lot.
And you said you were on duty sometimes during the air raids.
Yes, as I said, that's when I had to cycle in front of the guide strange fire engines coming in to assist the local firemen.
How would you do that? Would you have to wait at a point to collect them and bring them in, or would they arrive?
Oh, yeah, that's right, in a point, and then I was told where the fire was and where to take them. But of course, of my local knowledge, I used to pedal like hell in front of a fire engine, you can imagine. And then I said, assist.
Where would these fire engines come from? Would it be quite far afield or quite near?
I don't remember that. I'm sorry.
Okay, you've mentioned your reasons why you joined the Fleet Air Arm, and then you've just gone back to the recruitment and
yeah,
said about that.
Yes. Can I just say something about that? I told you I went to the RAF. They said I could apply for the Fleet Air Arm, I went to Cambridge, and I had to go in front of a board. There was an admiral there and senior officers asking all sorts of questions. But I, at the time when I went, there were a load of ATC cadets. And I thought, you know, my chances wouldn't be very good. But it was rather strange, but being a keen cyclist, I wore plus fours. I know it sounds irrelevant, but... After the interview, when I was successful, I saw the admiral, who had been in uniform, on a lady's bike wearing plus fours. So I assumed that there was some connection why I was successful and the ATC cadets weren't.
Can you remember the types of things, the questions that they were asking you at that selection board?
Yeah, I remember one of them. If you toss the coin up 50 times, what the odds it would come down, you know, heads or tails? And I just said 50-50, it seems to be. That sort of thing. But they weren't very searching ones. They wanted to know about education, of course.
Did they want to know about hobbies and that sort of thing as well?
Yeah, hobbies and sports. I was never, because of my build, I wasn't a very good at sport. I was very good at running. I used to be third in cross-country runs for the whole school, you know. But I played football and cricket, but not to first 11 standards. I think that's why the RAF turned me down. And also the fact that I got my credits in school certificate were French, geography and art. There was no maths or science in that.
What was the next stage after the interview?
I had to go to I had the medical, of course, very, and there was a question of my eyesight being colour blindness, being suspect, and I was sent to be tested in a big hall with projected lights, and I passed that all right. Previously, from the Japanese colour books, have you heard of? No. There were various colours, and you were able to see things in those books if you had no problems. They were very difficult. But I had this projected light onto a screen, like a cinema screen, and I passed, so that was all right. So then I went to Leon Solent, HMS Deedless.
How were you met when you arrived there?
Pardon?
How were you met when you arrived at Deedless?
In what respect do you mean?
Was there somebody to meet you as you'd arrived and show you what to do?
Yes, we had to. Yes, we were met, and then we were lined up outside the office to be told where to go and where we were going to sleep and what that is.
Were you issued with a uniform at that stage, or was it the next day?
I can't say. Well, it would be soon after, because we had to be fitted out. We had we did have white hat bands around the caps, because we were officer training, and we were nicknamed Seagoing Wrens by the rest of the Navy chap.
What was your accommodation like at Daedalus?
I can't really recall. It was just normal. There'd be metal beds and so on. But it was at Daedalus, I think it was reasonable rooms.
And what about the training that you did there? What was that first stage of training?
We were taken from there to South Sea to a gymnasium for physical training, you know, boxing and wall bars and all the rest of to toughen us up. And then we went to HMS St Vincent, which was like an old prison. It's a very dour place. And there was infamous Chief Petty Officer Wilmot. and a marine captain we had for drilling. But that was very frightening when you had this huge parade ground and all your mates lined up, and you had to tell them what to do for various, to get them in various places, you know, and to stop them before they hit a brick wall.
Did everyone have to take a turn at drilling?
Oh, yes, it was very, very much part of the course. The main point was to teach you seamanship, you know, knots and guns and armoury and stuff, and to create this team spirit and discipline, naval discipline.
So, am I right in thinking that when you were at Daedalus, it's to indoctrinate you into the Navy, and then really at St Vincent, it's to give you basic sort of skills?
That's right.
And with this training, you say you had to do things like seamanship and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
To what kind of level would you do the training? Was it just a basic, or was it a little bit more?
Well, we did have some. I remember going to boats, you know, for rowing and that sort of thing. And but as I said, it was mainly to teach you what the Navy was all about, and about weapons and so on. But the interesting part was that when we were all out on parade, every day we would, they would call out names to be duty cooks, and it was your job, as say three of you, to for your particular table, to go to the galley and get the food and to dish it out to your friends. And sometimes I do recall, I'd never really looked at the galley, but occasionally we would find cockroaches in the beetroot and that sort of thing. Terrible. Picture this. Anyway.
What was the kind of food you were getting like? What was that sort of thing?
Oh, it would be porridge and, you know, really basic stuff, you know, nothing fancy at all there.
Can you tell me something about Chief Petty Officer Wilmot, what he was like as a man?
Oh, well, he's like a typical sergeant major, the way they, you know, you awful little man, you know. He used to bark at us and try to frighten us. But he was all right. I mean, he had a great reputation. And the marine captain was really good with the drilling and so on, very helpful.
Did everyone take to drill?
Oh, yes, they all had to do it. Yeah, it was somewhat better than others, because you had to shout up, you know, across this big parade ground. And if you hadn't got much of a voice, it was rather difficult.
How much had your training in the Home Guard helped at that?
Oh, yes, that did help, yes, quite a lot. But I hadn't done any distance shouting to the degree that they wanted at St Vincent.
At that stage, were you given any kind of information on the Navy? Were you given a seamanship manual or something like that to learn?
Oh, yes, we had books on navigation and so on, which I got, and weather, and all, you know, the cloud formations and meteorology generally, you know.
When the course finished there, was that when you were assigned to flying training?
Just a bit. Oh, from there we went to RAF Sealand in Chester, near Chester, which was a short Sunderland base, And that's where we had the tiger moth training.
With the tiger moth, what was the first things that they did with you? Was it a familiarisation with the aircraft?
Yes. Oh, yes. Familiarisation. And we had quite a lot of dual flying to get you used to it. And I remember being sick in the thing and all over the controls, which were the cables and so on. I had to clear the mess up myself.
Was that on one of your first flights when they took you?
Yes, yes. But the I went solo at 9 3/4 hours, and but three others went up together, not solo, and one of them, Mike Levitt, he decided he'd beat the other two of us up. And he came across the front of us, but his tail caught my prop. He took 6 inches off my prop, and I ripped half his tail off. But we managed to get back to base, although my engine was shaking. Then he shook the engine out of the thing. But when we landed, I could see his tail was missing, and we were praised for getting the planes back, but we were also confined to barracks for a week or so. Punishment.
What had they done when you first started training? What was your impressions when you first saw the Tiger Moth? What did it look like as an aircraft?
Oh, it was just, it was wood and fabric. And string, really. It didn't look very robust. And it was, there were two cockpits, and when you, let me see, you sat in the back, and the instructor was at the front, and we took off always from, it was on just pure grass, there was no proper runway, just grass.
How did you communicate with the instructor?
Oh, by a tube. That's all. It wasn't electrical. It was a tube.
So how did that work then? How was it attached to you and him?
Well, just a you had a mouthpiece and on your helmet you had, you know, hearing side of it. I can't recall exactly how it worked.
What were the things that they taught you at first, before you soloed? What were the types of things that they taught you how to fly the aircraft?
Well, the controls and the engine, how it worked and so on. They're gypsy engines and and the dangers of flying and communication and that sort of thing. It was it's difficult to remember, you know, exactly. One sort of accepts it now as just elementary stuff as it was then, elementary flying.
Was it a nice aircraft to fly at the time?
Oh, yes, very nice. But it if it was a bit breezy, it was very difficult to get it on the ground. It used to float. If you didn't come in at the right angle, if your wheels touched the ground, you'd bump up in the air and you'd stay up and then you'd bump down again. It was a bumpity bump job. And so it was, you had to eventually get it to land smoothly. It was easily, you know, blown about.